pray and to get in touch with their belief. This is a time where our beliefs will be tested, will be tried, both for the church and individuals personally. Individuals will come to Christ due to the fact that they are fearful. That's what we call receptivity. When they are faced with circumstances, they surrender to the Lord. And some might be short-term, and others might be long-term. But through it all, I think we need to accept the fact that we need to contact, to get in touch with our faith and trust God who can, you know, carry us through these times.
I want to thank you very much for joining us. And as I said from the outset, this is not the norm for us to have a program of Down to Brass Tacks on a Good Friday. But we decided that in the circumstances, it was necessary for us to do this. And what we will do, we will wrap this program up at 12:30 because it's not our norm to do it. But I think based on the kind of feedback that we've had so far, I think we can go to 12:30 with today's edition of the program. Now, let's take another call. Hello? It's noon in Barbados. Hello?
Oh, hi. Good morning. Happy Good Friday to everybody.
Yes.
My name is Dr. Diane Brathwaite.
Yes.
And I wanted to just call in with a point. And I just wanted to stress to Barbadians that at this time, with the challenge we're facing, it's particularly important to be eating healthy, balanced diets. And also to make sure that if you have a non-communicable disease, that you're actually taking the best care of yourself possible. To date, a lot of the evidence has shown that people who have uncontrolled non-communicable diseases actually will fare worse if they develop COVID. So while prevention is, of course, like key, because you don't even want to expose yourself to that risk, you need to also put your body in the best position to have a slightly stronger immune system to deal with any challenges that come. So just encouraging people to actually eat healthy, more vegetables, more fruit, less of the junk food that's going on, reduce the sodium, etc.
Okay, thank you very much. Now, let's deal with this whole question of the flow of information and the talk about the negatives that are coming at you. So you have a situation right now where a lot of information is coming out of the United States. That information is particularly relevant to Barbados because we have many Barbadians living in the United States. And then when we go further than that to look at the region as a whole, there's a lot more negative news that is impacting on the West Indian community there. The question for us as practitioners, media practitioners in Barbados is, how can you turn off of that? How can you shut it down when there is a need to know what is happening, how bad it is, and, you know, what progress is being made in relation to things like vaccines, the issues with ventilators that they are facing in the United States, and the extent to which the Americans are shutting down the export of certain things. I mean, the question that I ask as a media practitioner is, how do you close your eyes to that? And I will also say this. You live in a country where a lot of people turn a blind eye to the situation until it becomes a crisis. And when you can take action early to try to avert the crisis, people ignore it. We have seen it happen in this crisis as it relates to the young people. And to some of the not so young, we have failed at one stage to penetrate, to get that message to penetrate into the heads of people that you needed social distancing. So our dilemma is trying to educate and inform while at the same time having to convey news that can create this sense of unease and panic. So I think Dr. Sue wants to comment on this matter.
Yes. Good afternoon. What I've noticed is that a lot of persons are becoming anxious because of all the negative news media coverage. And a lot of that negative news media coverage is not the coverage coming from Barbados necessarily, but as you quite rightly said, it's coming from the overseas media, especially big media houses like CNN and so on in the U.S. where they're only highlighting much of the negative things that are happening. And it was, I think, Mr. Thorne who said earlier there needs to be a greater effort to highlight the positives that are happening. And there have been some positives that are coming out of it. But that being said, you do have a need to balance the responsibility between getting the relevant information as well as your own self-care. So if you are listening to the media coverage all the time and you're not shutting off, that is going to lead to a lot of anxiety in the best of us. You have to set aside a time where you say, this is my point, my cutoff, my boundary that I need to set, where this time will be for me, my family, or any of my loved ones to keep in contact with them and practice self-care, and I'm not going to tune into that media coverage at that time. Everybody has to know where their boundary is for that. And it's going to be different for different professionals, but this is a great concern for me, especially for staff members who are on the front line, who sometimes are being constantly bombarded by it. Because you will reach a point where you think, I don't want to hear anything more about COVID. And that will happen if you are not practicing, as I said, the self-care and taking that time out for yourself to recharge and re-energize yourself for the days ahead. And we can't afford for people to be burning out now in these early stages. Exactly. Yeah. So we have to be practicing these things from now.
Who's adding to that?
Yeah, I can. Carrie Ann Hurley here again, social worker. I absolutely agree. Setting boundaries is critical. I understand the conundrum, I guess, that persons working in media would have, even from a personal perspective of needing to be accessible to all information coming in, but at the same time, you also need to manage how you are processing that information as well, and then how you are sharing it. You have a responsibility, yes, to share everything. But I do appreciate that it does seem as if the negative outweighs the positives generally. I have kind of coined the term hashtag corona breaks. I think it's important that in this time we take breaks from the information that is coming in. And as was just said, we have to set those boundaries based on what works for us. So the caller before spoke about, you know, ensuring that we're eating healthy and working out and taking care of ourselves. When we carve out those corona break times, that's when we can really amplify the self-care activities that we need to be doing, whether that is cooking meals with our family. We say, okay, for the next hour and a half, we're not going to be talking about corona. We're not going to be watching or listening to anything. We're all going to just come together and cook this recipe that we have and make it a family activity. Or we're going to only be playing games right now and just, you know, or watching television, watching a movie or some kind of TV show that might be a comedy or a romance or something that has absolutely nothing to do with fear and anxiety and stress. Just giving yourself an opportunity to experience other emotions outside of the general ones that we are being bombarded with because of a lot of the negative information.
There is a balance. There's a balance. I will tell you two pieces of information have come to light recently that I thought we needed to hear about. The discussion that has been taking place about the vulnerability of black people the United States. And there's another one, the susceptibility of men. There's information that more men are dying from this disease
than females.
Than females. And then I have to link it to this message here where somebody says, you know, I went out looking for groceries and passed several houses with men liming in the patios. Now, this is what I realize as well. People have decided they can't lime on the street. Well, they're going into the patios of their friends and they're liming and they still have the close proximity. So at the end of the day, they want to suggest, well, this is private property. And no police should really be coming to tell me how I should live on my private property. So let the boys lime here. But if you don't get them to appreciate that they are vulnerable and more vulnerable because they are men, then we are in trouble. So this is the dilemma that you face when it comes to dealing with this information. Do you keep that to yourself because it's negative?
No, absolutely not. You share that.
Archdeacon Lynch?
In fact, the past three presenters emphasize self-care, and it's really very important because the information is there. And if you're a professional in the area, medical, and certainly for you, David, and your colleagues who are in the media and who have to sift through a great deal of information to distill the one that is most appropriate, we are going to have a challenge. So I have personally said, you know, I continue the practice of at least one meal a day. I must sit in my patio and eat and take a meal a day, at least one. And in fact, for the morning, with the morning right now, I can't go walking early in the morning. Outside of the house, I can sit and enjoy it, and indeed enjoy the break of the day. And sit there and listen to your music very quietly. No television on, none of that news coming in, read, etc. The second thing I seek to do is I do gardening, vegetable gardening. Because, again, I must be productive, but I must feel that I am connecting again with that God who has made me to be a one of his creatures and help with the whole aspect of procreation, creating with God what we are doing and what we need here on earth. So we must do that self-care. It is critical. What is, in my opening remarks, they call maintenance. That must be done. Each one of us.
You know, I've noticed that essentially it makes each one of us, it kind of isolates us from everybody else.
Yeah.
Each individual now is forced to be on their own.
Yeah.
In a way that you weren't on your own before.
Yes.
And there are some people who can't deal with that.
Yes.
I would say you're on your own physically.
Yeah.
You're more on your own physically, but that does not have to be the case socially.
I
think that we're pretty fortunate in Barbados to have the telecommunications network that we do.
As so we have social workers.
Just hold on.
We have a lot of means of keeping in contact with each other.
Let me hear some other views on that.
David Suleiman.
Suleiman.
Okay. Yes. One of the challenges, I believe, is that are these persons that are flouting the laws listening to these messages? And maybe that may be something that they're not actually listening. And I think what it has forced us to become is our neighbor's keepers. Now, we can't have the connection physically, but we will have to be able to say to our neighbors or those who are flouting the law that, you know, tell them what they're doing is not the correct thing to do. And that's where we have to step up. And the other thing that I want to add here, too, is that not everybody has that family support. There are a lot of people that are on their own. And perhaps, again, we have to be our neighbor's keeper, find out who is in our neighborhood that does not have that family support that they can turn to, and in some way find a way of connecting with them to offer that comfort and that support in these times.
A lot of this has to do with education, because when a week ago, we had more of a challenge trying to get people to understand, and that was visible on the streets. We have evidence now that people are not on the streets as much as they were before. And to what extent is that driven by information and people actually reminding them of the need to protect others? Because the guys who are liming together have to... Most of them go home. They go home to a mother, grandmother, or somebody else who's in a position to say, "But look, look, what are you doing? You are potentially exposing me to danger here." Let's take a call. Hello.
Hi. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yeah. This question is for the deacons and bishop on your program. I'm not a Christian, but if I was a Christian, I would ask these sort of questions. The Christian world, millions of people that is Christian. They believe in this man called Jesus Christ. In the Bible, they say he was crucified. He was crucified, put on the cross, crucified, and he overcame death. Now, if he's overcome death, where this same Jesus cannot come on the earth and save his people? That's my question for the panel.
Yeah, the theologians need to answer that.
The first part of the question, I didn't hear.
I think he's basically saying that, you know, this is Good Friday. We look at the fact that Christ died on the cross and that sort of thing, and was resurrected later. So, if Christ was able to do all of that, why is it that he can't, in this person's judgment, come and save his people now?
He's still in the process of saving.
Exactly.
It's still in the process of saving, and it is a process through which we will go until that time when God will come again through Jesus the Christ, and will usher us into a final fellowship with Him. And then indeed, because we are called to be procreators with God, to be working with God to bring His salvation into being, we are called to recognize the reality of our situation. Science helps us with this. The political directorate helps us. The health authorities are helping us and seeing what we can do. Part of my Good Friday sermon for today, we work with the authorities and seek not only for self, but also for others. That is part of the caring that we are called to do. Dean Jeffrey Gibson, in the stream service from the cathedral last night, spoke to us through the notion of love, loving each other, just as Jesus the Christ loved us. And these are the important things for us to do. Each one of us must play our part. And though I would love to do what I would normally do, the truth is, for the present time, I need to buckle down, listen to what the health authorities, accredited health authorities, are saying, and follow.
Okay, let's
To support Archdeacon Lynch, I think that same question was raised on the first Good Friday as well. But you see, as we say, we believe as Christians that God's plan of salvation included the experience of Good Friday.
Yeah.
And I think most persons tend to see Jesus, or want to see Jesus, as a superman. So you jump in and rescue the people.
Yeah.
So the question that I believe, he is saving. He continues to save. And I think that it's not just about what we narrowly consider salvation as you give your life to Jesus Christ, but salvation also comes through those persons over there who are on the front line, who are doing all they can to help us.
Yeah. Yeah.
God, so I see that as part of salvation as well. So I will say to the caller, yes, he's doing it, but perhaps he's doing it not in a way that we can recognize it. And certainly the Christian's concept of Jesus, not one who is a superman or superhero who comes and rescues us in these times of crisis, but the plan unfolds, and as that kind of unfolds, we may not always agree, because people also, I want to go back and say, that was the whole problem of Palm Sunday. Didn't fit the concept of Messiah, so therefore, well, you're not serving any purpose, but in the end, we realize that this is, so we must see the bigger picture.
Well, let me say to also, the other reality is that even in this crisis, the Christian still has a message of hope that he has to communicate even in this mess. So Jesus told us that we shouldn't even think so much about our life, otherwise we'll lose it. But we have an obligation in the midst of this, even if in doing that we lose our life, but we have a message that is still to say to people that there is still hope. So we are not just going to abandon this and look for an escape rope. We want to stay here, and we still want to convey that sense of hope and courage for those who are still here going through the initial crisis. So we see our role here as very, very integral in the process. Even after post-COVID-19, we have to be able to tell people, in spite of what they're going through, in spite of what is happening, that there is hope after we get through this. So therefore, we must be there to communicate that message very, very positively.
How is this likely to change the church as we know it? How is this likely to change the church as we know it?
Yeah.
For one thing, it has affected us, in terms of our gathering. But what it has done, which I think is positive, is that we have now been able in a greater dimension to marry technology and theology. You know, there's not a holy matrimony between the two of them. And what has happened now, that even through this crisis, through the use of technology, we've been able to reach a lot more people with the message. Because before many of us weren't streaming, and if you had a membership of maybe, say, 50, 60, maybe say 100, okay, your message was limited to those who were within the four walls. But now that we have the use of technology, there are some persons now who would have normally reached maybe 100 persons on a given Sunday. They are able to reach 1,000 now because of the technology. So it's not all negative. We see the potential now of this message now spreading to a greater cross-section of people because of the use of technology.
So we're going to go until 12:30 with this edition, and let's take another call. Yes, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon, Ms. Ellis.
Yes, sir.
This is Mohammed Nasser.
Mm-hmm.
First, I got about two or three, but you ain't got a lot of time
because we're going to wrap up at 12:30.
Let me ask the first one. I want you to tell me of anything that the press has published or talked about that is negative in relation to this coronavirus.
Well, I think what they're talking about is the fact that a lot of the information that is coming out can generate fear, because the numbers, for instance, the increase in numbers worldwide, the number of deaths overall, the spread of the pandemic is what is the panic button. The press is.
But is that not true? That is happening.
It is true, but
it's not good. We should know.
Well, we agreed on that already. That
and
we should know.
Would not help us to be more careful.
Yeah, well, that's one side of it too. That if you know, then you won't be lulled into a false sense of complacency. But the issue here is how much of it you absorb. That some people react differently to negative news. So there are people
but
that I know.
But it's not negative. If you were reporting a fact,
no,
it
but
cannot be negative.
No. Because it's a fact, does not necessarily. Look, a fact can be negative or positive.
Mr. Ref, I tell you that the God of boulders rolling down some place, and some people getting through and some ain't getting through. Is that negative or positive?
Well, if boulders are coming at me, they're
some
negative, but it's a fact.
Okay, so therefore, how it could be negative if it's a fact?
No. You and I
different.
What's the next point?
Yeah, again. Right now you have in your, at least on the program here, a whole set of pastors, reverend, even a Muslim there.
Mm-hmm.
I want to find out from them, why should man fear God, or fear Allah, as we Muslims would say? What is the fundamental reason for fearing God? Any of them can answer that question first.
Right.
Why should I or you or anybody fear God?
Okay, well, thank you. Let me see if we get a quick response to that. Anybody wants to take it?
Well, David. Fear can be understood in two ways. Reverence and respect, and fear also in the sense of a person going to run away. And I think when we think of fear of God, we think more of reverence and respect as opposed to run away.
Somebody else wanted to...
Suleiman.
Yeah.
From our Islamic perspective, what we are calling for is God consciousness. It's not about fear and that comes into it, but it's God consciousness. You're conscious that there is a creator, and the creator is there, and you give your reverence and your submission to the creator's will, and you abide, you live your life according to that. And so there's a consciousness of God that we are trying to achieve.
Okay, let's take another call.
It is reverential fear, a holy respect for the ultimate authority.
Yeah.
Let's take another call. Hello. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Yes, welcome.
Hi, thank you. So my question really pertains to, in cases of crisis, it's known that the already existing inequalities in society begin to expand. And my main question relates to the heightened vulnerability towards cases of domestic abuse.
Yes.
And this is not just abuse in terms of physical abuse, but sexual abuse, financial abuse, emotional abuse, the list goes on. To the faith leaders on the panel, are there any particular intervention or support services for cases of abuse or heightened cases of abuse happening now within society because we're under a crisis? And if not, do you think this is an opportunity for faith leaders to come out strongly and articulate firmly that this does not provide an opportunity for abuse and do not see it that way, and to counsel society very firmly that these things are wrong and it's wrong to act in this manner?
Interesting question.
Yeah, very. In fact, it is an excellent question, actually. And I know that this was put on the table, not only because, again, the media abroad pointed this out abroad, but we recognize this as one of the outcomes of the present curfew, etc. And there is a crisis hotline, and I'm going to send you, David, the number. I don't have it right at hand, but a crisis hotline for those who feel that they are being abused or in an abusive situation, for them to call, because we're very clear that the possibility exists that in the curfew situation, those who are feeling threatened by an abusive relationships can, in fact, feel even more threatened. And indeed, the abusers can use the opportunity to release a great deal of abuse onto person.
Well, I want to thank you all very much for joining us on this Good Friday and taking some of your valuable time and sharing it with the public of Barbados and giving others an opportunity to get some guidance as to how best we can attempt to cope with COVID-19 and all that it has brought to us. The fear, the pain, the anxiety. We've been joined today by Archdeacon Eric Lynch of the Anglican Church, Reverend Adrian Odell, Superintendent Bethel Circuit of the Methodist Church of Barbados, Muslim leader Sullivan Bulbulia, Adventist pastor Colin Thorne, and social workers Pamela Jones Goodrich, Alicia Moses, Trisha Brown. We've also had Bishop-elect Apostle Selwyn Brathwaite of the Pentecostal Assemblies of the West Indies, Dr. Joyce Sue, and we also heard from Carrie-Anne Hurley. I want to thank you also, Ronnie Clark, for assisting with the technical operations and functioning as producer, and of course, David Johnson, who assisted us greatly in that regard as well. I'm David Ellis. Do have a great afternoon and enjoy your holiday season. On Monday, we're going to do something that's a bit different. Again, we don't normally do brass tacks on Easter Monday, but on this occasion, we want you to leave the phones open only for Barbadians who live abroad. Those who are in New York, London, Toronto, wherever you are in the world, we want you to share with us what your experience is like on Monday's edition of Down to Brass Tacks.